I've never framed anything from ground up. I never even put a pillar in the ground to hold a foundation for a house. So it was definitely a learning process. It's been slow because I've been going extra slow so I don't have to double back and do something again that I was rushing on and missed a step.
Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and this is episode 268 with Otis and Frida Sanders. Today's episode is all about the joys and challenges of building a small home in the woods, and nobody knows this better than our guest, Otis Sanders. Otis has spent the past 5 years constructing his dream home in the great outdoors, and he did it mostly on his own. Picture this. You're alone in the woods with nothing but your tools, surrounded by towering trees and the sounds of nature. It might sound intimidating, but Otis wasn't intimidated. Instead, he found serenity and satisfaction in the process of creating a space that he could call his own. In this episode, we'll be discussing the challenges of building solo in the woods, including how to transport materials, manage your time, and ensure your safety when you're working alone. We'll also talk about the importance of sustainability and reducing environmental waste in the construction process. And finally, we'll dive into the joys of creating something beautiful and unique with your own hands and the sense of accomplishment that comes with it. So if you're considering building your own tiny house, or you're simply interested in sustainability or the joys of living in the woods, this episode is for you. Join me as I talk with Otis and Frida Sanders about their amazing journey and learn all about the benefits of building small in the great outdoors. But before we get started, did you know that I personally send Tiny House newsletter every week on Tuesdays? It's called Tiny Tuesdays, and it's a weekly email with Tiny House news, interviews, photos, and resources. It's free to subscribe, and I even share sneak peeks of things that are coming up, ask for feedback about upcoming podcast guests, and more. It's really the best place to keep a pulse on what I'm doing in the tiny house space, and also stay informed of what's going on in the tiny house movement. To sign up, go to thetinyhouse.net/newsletter, where you can sign up for the Tiny Tuesdays newsletter. And of course, you can unsubscribe at any time. I will never send you spam. And if you ever don't want to receive emails, it's easy to unsubscribe. So again, that's thetinyhouse.net/newsletter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy next week's Tiny Tuesdays newsletter. All right, I am here with Otis and Frida Sanders. Otis is a professional photographer, a 3-time published author, and a content creator on YouTube, where he has 2 YouTube channels. Otis and Frida live in Southern California, where Frida is a realtor. Otis's first channel is Seventh Son Productions, where he documents himself as he builds a small house alone in the woods in Alabama. There are several other playlists on the channel, such as The Creative Corner, Building Successful Marriages, Specialty Videos, and Shorts. The second channel is A Path to Green. This channel was created to highlight individuals, organizations, and businesses that are doing their part in either striving to create a sustainable and or green life or helping others on their journey as it relates to going green, net zero, or just reducing their carbon footprint to live a more sustainable life. Otis and Frida, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nathan, how are you?
Thank you.
Great, great. Thank you both for being here. Wow, there are so many things that I kind of want to ask you about, but I guess what inspired you to start building a small house, you know, alone in the woods in Alabama?
Well, I think it all started back, I guess, early 90s, late 80s, when my mom wanted me to take over the property that she had in Alabama. And I reluctantly did so. And I guess after that, I just started thinking about what the purpose of the property would be. It was just sitting, there was nothing happening with it. So I just started thinking about things that I wanted to do. And seeing as I was born not too far from there in a little shack, I decided that it would be a good thing if I decided to build a house myself in the woods since I had this property. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I didn't know as much as I know now about construction. So I wanted to get started back then, but of course the time nor the money was right because I've always been a freelance photographer. I had the time, but didn't have the money.
Okay.
So yeah, I had to just kind of wait on it.
And was this property just raw land, like nothing on it?
It was raw land, but it was used in the past for timberland. So the last time it was cut, it was about, I guess, maybe 10 years before I took over, and nothing was planted on it. So just random trees were basically growing from volunteers and things like that. So that's all there was then.
Got it. Okay. And so how long was it before you actually did start? Or maybe you could talk about, you know, how long were you kind of planning this before you started?
Let's see. This was the early 90s or a little bit before. So in my head, I started then. So that was before YouTube and tiny houses and all that that I knew of. I mean, there's always been tiny houses around, but it wasn't as popular as it is now. So what I did is that I was just thinking about how I wanted the house to look in the whole nine yards. So what happened is that the house started out as, well, in my mind, it started out as being a container. I was going to put together a couple of containers, first starting out with one, then add on as I went. But the logistics just wouldn't work out. I could buy a container that was actually pretty inexpensive, but getting it there was a problem. So I could get the container dropped off at the very beginning of the property where it turns off from the main road. But then I'd have to get it another mile back into where the property was.
Okay.
So that was pretty much a logistical nightmare since I had no money anyway. So it reiterated itself into stick build, which is what I actually am doing now.
Okay. Yeah, I would imagine that getting the container through the woods, is there a road of some kind?
It's a makeshift logging road because I'm surrounded by timberland. So what happens is I have property in the back corner, so I have to go through other companies' property to get to mine. So there's a logging road. When they get ready to cut timber, they'll use this particular road to get in, cut the timber, and get out.
Okay.
So that was the only thing. And this road is not the best road, especially when it rains. So there's a couple of spots in there where it gets muddy so that coming in, you'll need a four-wheel drive of some sort. For the most part, you could get through it with a regular truck if you kind of know how to drive in the mud and stuff like that, but it's easier with four-wheel drive.
Okay.
So that made it pretty impossible. Well, not impossible, but I just didn't have the money. I got a quote on a crane, and from where the crane came from, it was going to be $250 to start it up. It's going to be it was going to be $250 per hour until the crane got back to its location. And from where I was, the location, it was about 60, 70 miles one way.
Oh boy.
So that was pretty much cost prohibitive for me to do such a thing.
Yeah. 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 Now, Frida, I'm sure you've heard, you heard Otis kind of talking about this project over the years. What was your take on it?
Well, Otis has a fairly independent spirit. So if that's was something that he enjoyed, then I think, well, when I met him, he kind of spoke about having a place in the wood or cabin of some sort. So it wasn't like totally surprising.
Okay. And is this a place, I guess this is a question for both of you, that you envisioned like going and spending time together, or is this like, is this like a man cave in the woods kind of thing?
It's both. Most of the time since I've been building
it. It's primarily a man cave.
That's two different answers.
It is. well, she's been there, and I imagine that we'll go there again at times. But it will more than likely be a place that I go when I'm building and working on it, because I don't think it'll really ever end. There's always going to be something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. How often do you go there? Because that is quite a journey from where you live now.
It is. I've been trying to go 2 to 4 times a year. So every 4 months, maybe I'll try and go down and stay 2 or 3 times a year and do that. And usually I'll go down for a couple of weeks. But here lately, I've been trying to do at least a month once a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But since I work it, I don't have that much time off. I'd like to go down and be able to stay for a couple of months, but that hasn't really been working out here of late.
Okay. Okay. So can you tell me a little bit about the construction itself and, you know, what considerations you have to make, you know, when you are hauling materials, sounds like a mile into the woods and working mostly alone. What are some things that people should consider if they're thinking about doing something similar?
Well, it's how they used to say, older folks used to say, it's more than a notion, which means that you have to really be dedicated to the project because it's been going on now for 5 years. I started in 2017. I almost didn't do it because each time I went down to try and find a spot in the woods to clear out to build, it would rain each and every day that I was there, almost 24/7. So I went down 3 or 4 times before I was able to actually get in there. And the last time, well, I decided that I was going to give it one more shot. And the very last time I was getting ready to go out there, it was raining like nobody's business. So my brother and I was sitting in the truck, leaving one of the lumber stores. And I was asking him, I says, well, what do you think? You think it's raining up there and it's going to be raining all day like they say it's supposed to be? He said, probably will.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, look, we're all packed and we're ready to go. So I'm going to drive up there anyway. So we're going to give it a shot. So what I did is I drove to the location, well, almost the location. There's a family church or our family church not too far from there. I parked the truck with a trailer in there. And since this was a place you couldn't really go without a four-wheel drive, and I didn't have one, my brother had a side-by-side, one of these small vehicles that you use on the farms and things. Mm-hmm. So I unloaded that, and then it stopped raining a little bit. Then we got on and we went out there, and as we got there, it stopped raining. Then we went in and I found a spot really quickly because I knew it was going to start raining again. So I found a spot really quickly and start cutting out a few small trees. And lo and behold, I got about 10 or 15 trees cut. And these were small, not really big. And I purposely tried to do that so that I wouldn't have to, you know, cut down a lot of big trees because I wasn't an expert, you know, cutting trees with chainsaws and stuff like that. So we were able to do that. Yeah. And I got it started and it just kind of went from there. But I think what will have to happen is that you'll have to consider the fact that you're working alone. The first day my brother was out there, the next day my nephew came out and he helped me a little bit. But after that, I was pretty much on my own. So you have to consider the safety factors first and foremost, because there was, at that point, I didn't have a cell phone that could get signal out there. So I was out there alone. So once you go off the main road and you get out of sight, nobody knows you're there. So if someone sees you go in there, they may know you're in there. But if they don't know you, they're not going to come and check to see if you're okay. So that's one of the major things, is the safety part. Now, as I got going, the other part was just the fact of getting material out to the build site. And that was a little difficult at the beginning because I only had this little side-by-side, and you could only put so much on that. So that's basically how I got it started.
Okay. And at this point, it looks like from your YouTube channel, it looks like you're installing a septic system right now?
Yes, that was the last thing I did in March when I was there. So that's actually in and covered for the most part. I got to, once I go back, I'll have to probably put more dirt on top of it because it'll probably compact a little bit. And I still have a lot of dirt that's left out. So that was the last step that I did.
Okay. So there's so many skills involved here, you know, from clearing land to, you know, framing a house and everything in between. How have you approached learning these new skills?
Well, as I said, from the beginning, I wanted to do this, but I didn't have those skills. I had a little bit of them, but I had never built anything like this small house.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, as a professional photographer,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of jobs that I've been on where we actually had to build fake rooms, stuff like that, just to put furniture and shoot like that. So I had a little bit of knowledge okay. of framing, but it was not the same, because when you watch somebody build on YouTube, it looks all great, it's easy and wonderful and all that. But once you start, you see the little things that you don't see on the video, because
yeah.
what you see on the video is just the good stuff, the things that work. There in the, as it goes, there's a lot of things that you don't know that don't work that you have to do again and again. So over the years, I worked with a buddy of mine who is a contractor. And then I've had other jobs like that where I've gotten mm-hmm. a little bit better, but still, I've never framed anything from ground up. I never even put a pillar in the ground to hold a foundation for a house. So
mm-hmm.
it was definitely a learning process. It's been slow, because I've been going extra slow so I don't have to double back and do something again that I was rushing on
yep.
and missed a step. So that's been the only thing. I think what happens is that
yep.
when I'm building, I just try and take my time, try to do a little research beforehand, and then try and tackle it. So it's been a slow process, but it's been a great process. So when I started this thing, it was more about building the house. After the first trip or so, it became more the process, because I got such enjoyment out of just being in the woods alone and doing this thing.
Mm.
In the beginning also, I had the fact that I need to cut lumber and stuff like that. So I had a generator. I started it up one day and it was just so much noise.
Okay.
It was ridiculous. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to have to get a hand saw because I don't want to hear the noise. But now as I went,
wow,
when it got to the point of me actually framing this thing, getting it locked in and dried in, I had to make some changes because it was going at such a pace. I was getting to the end of my trip and I wasn't where I wanted to be. So as you probably know, when you frame a structure out
yeah.
in the woods or where it rains a lot, you have to cover it. Otherwise, the weather is going to destroy it. It's going to make the 2x4s buckle and curve and stuff like that. So I had to get off my natural high horse, I will call it, because I wanted to keep it quiet and keep it nature-like and all that, because it was really great. But I saw that it wasn't going to get it done, nailing a nail one by one.
Yeah.
So I ended up bringing in, well, I had my generator there. I brought in a compressor. I brought in a nail gun.
Yeah.
And it was on. It was just all kinds of noise. So
uh-huh.
anytime I got a chance to shut it off, to just hear nothing, I did, because I don't know if you've been out in the woods where there's actually nothing, no sound. This is where I was, because I was so far off the road. Every now and again, I would hear a semi go down the road,
yeah.
but that was about it. It was just really quiet. So you can hear a stick fall. You know, it was just so quiet. But of course, I had to get over that, because I wanted to go ahead and get this house dried in, because I would have hated to have gotten to that point
yeah.
and not been able to dry it in. And it's messed up when I come back, and then I'd have to start all over again.
Yeah. Well, I think in one of the photos that you sent, I see a little inverter and a battery, but I'm guessing you weren't able to rely on solar for the power needs of power tools.
Yes, and the solar part just happened this last March, because what I've been doing is that when I know I'm going to need something, I'll just start buying it little bit by little bit, because
uh-huh.
I'm not taking out a loan or anything to build this. This is just from money I've saved
uh-huh.
during between each trip.
Yep.
So what I would do is I would buy one solar panel,
mm-hmm.
then I'd buy another solar panel, then I'll get the
mm-hmm.
inverter and the charging, well, not the charging, but the the 12 volt block and just get these little things one by one. So I just got the solar going the last trip I was there, and I also bought a refrigerator so that I could actually have some cold drinks and stuff like that, other than the cooler.
Right. Well, that must be nice.
It is nice. And I had a light bulb moment once when I was out in the woods, because what I didn't realize I was doing, I was basically just concentrating on everything I needed to have when I go into the woods, because it's such a long trip. Is if you have to leave and get something, you basically blown the day. Mm-hmm. So in the morning, I'm just really, really concentrated mm-hmm. on what I need to take with me. I'd leave my brother's house because I would stay there. I wasn't able to stay in the house then. So I would leave his house. Mm-hmm. On my way, I would stop like at a fast food place and get some breakfast, because I didn't have any food out there really. So I stopped mm-hmm. there, and I would get my food, and I'd get an extra cup of ice water. And I would have like maybe a gallon container of water. I'd go out there, and I'm working all day, and I'll drink this water, and I have a gallon of water. Then I get back to his house, and I'm feeling really tired. And then my nephew came out, and he was helping mm-hmm. me one day. And we took a break, and he went to the back of his truck, and he opened up this cooler. Now, Ethan, I have everything out here that I need to build a house, but I don't have anything for my nourishment. Mm-hmm. I would take a gallon of water, and that's it. I had a cooler at my brother's place, but I never thought to bring it. I don't know why, but it was just one of those things where I had that aha moment when he had his, and I'm going like, I have one of these, but I never use it. So it was one of those things. So that basically helped me through the rest of it, because, you know, when I got, you know, tired or, you know, exhausted or something, thirsty, hungry, I could go back and get some food. And that didn't happen until well into the bill, because I was just so concentrated on the things that I need to build with. I wasn't thinking about myself.
Yeah. And that's, you know, having built my own tiny house as well, I agree that it's incredibly tiring doing construction. It gives you a new appreciation for people who build houses full time for a living.
Yeah.
And just to do it yourself, even one time, even part time, it's humbling for sure.
Yeah, it's a great experience though. I'm quite pleased with the progress I've made over the years. Now, I think when you talk about building a house, people just don't naturally think that it would take 5 years. But in this situation and circumstances, that's basically what it is, because I live so far away from it. Mm-hmm. I work full time, and I just have to save the money, because I don't need to try and take on a loan or anything to do this, because it's not my daily business. So I don't need to take away money, you know, from the family to do this.
Yeah. And would you mind sharing if you have the figure, you know, roughly available, like what have you spent so far building the house? And I guess, you know, you could either include or not include your travel expenses, because I'm sure that those add up too.
Well, with everything from the travel to the food to the building supplies and gas for the truck, gas for the generator. And I do have a truck now, so that's included in there. And gas for that truck, I think now, the last time I did a calculation was a couple of trips ago, and I was right at about 15,000. Mm-hmm. So I could possibly be at 20 right now, because I haven't figured the last few trips in. So I'd say right around 20.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And you've got a house that you can live in on some land, and a truck, and truck and everything. That's awesome.
Yes, it's definitely a good thing. The last two to four visits I've made, I've actually lived there, because most of the time, I've only been there once where it's been really, really cold. It's gotten down to about 30 degrees out there, and I didn't have any heat. And it's not fully insulated with drywall and stuff on the inside. So that was pretty rough. But every other trip has been great, because it's just been mild weather, almost Southern California type weather.
Nice. Tell me about, you know, the YouTube channel specifically. At what point was doing a YouTube channel to document the build like always a part of the plan, or is it something that did something convince you to do it at some point, or can you talk about that?
Well, this whole YouTube venture was actually an idea of a cousin of mine. Mm-hmm. He out of the blue said one day, "You should start a YouTube channel." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Why mm-hmm. would I do that?" And of course, he had all of his great reasons. So he said, "Well, just think of a name." Mm-hmm. So I thought of a name, and he created one for me. And he put up one video of of a chair, a story of a chair that I did years and years ago. So it stayed like that for a very long time. So I didn't think of doing a YouTube channel until I was actually able to start building the house. So I said, this is such a monumental thing for me. I might as well document it, because I just started doing a little video at the same time also, because I wanted to actually look at this later on for me. And I decided that that would be a pretty good idea. And since I just started my venture in video, I thought it'd be a great thing so that I could show this as it materialized along the way. And then, of course, after that, there are other things I thought about doing.
Yeah.
As far as the building successful marriages and these other channels that I had, other playlists that I had. And it just took on a life of its own. And of course, as you said earlier, I now have another YouTube channel, and I'm thinking about doing podcasting also.
Nice, nice. And that, so yeah, I love the variety of things that you have on your channel. It clearly reflects that you're a very creative person. And you have a lot of different creative interests, and they've all found a home on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing. By looking at you, I can see that I'm probably a little bit older than you, a couple of days or something like that. So the thing is, when I started doing photography way, way back before YouTube, stuff like that, there was, you know, I still love photography, but as we've come into the 21st century, it just seems like video is a thing now to actually tell stories. And it's a great medium.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with YouTube, it's free to upload your videos so that anybody over the world can see it, or all over the world can see them.
Yep.
So it's one of those things. And back when I first started art school in the early 80s, I had an idea of converting a UPS truck into my dark room and a living area and that kind of thing, so I could travel the country to do photography.
Nice.
But the thing I thought about also is the fact that when I would go out, take these pictures, and run out of money to travel with, what would I do? There was no YouTube back then, so there was no remote working and things like that. So that was an idea that I had that was a little bit too soon. So I think what has happened is that doing YouTube and building a house and these other things I have on a creative outlet have been my fill-in for way back in the day when I wanted to do things like that. You know, just an older guy just trying to have a little fun in the 21st century.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. And then, Frida, are you involved in any of the YouTube channel interviews or videos?
Very little.
Do you like the role behind the camera?
I'm interested, but haven't quite got brave enough to do very, very much with video as I could and should.
Fair, fair. Yeah, there's probably, I mean, I feel like if you work in real estate, it's always helpful to have nice photos and videos of listings.
And I have a little bit of that, but I could be doing much more.
Well, I think you've got someone living nearby who's very knowledgeable.
Well, we're working on that part. Well, I'm trying to get her to do a little bit more.
And this question is for either of you. How has your experience, you know, building this small house in the woods, you know, impacted your lives and your perspective on sustainability?
Well, I think as I've gotten into this, it's probably, and I think for a fact, it is leading me more in the direction of actually spending more time there and becoming more sustainable mm-hmm. in the way that I live and how I live. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I think about a lot now is just the idea of trash. Because when I'm there, there's always trash. There's always plastics for the most part. Now, the other things, paper and stuff like that, I can burn because you are allowed to burn trash there.
Yeah.
But what do you do with plastic? And how do you live without buying things that are encased in plastic? There are a couple of stores not too far away where I can go and get like beans and flour and rice and things like that and put it into my own containers and bring it back and put it into glass or whatever. So I won't have to have packaging for that. Uh-huh. But it's something that I think about a lot. And since I am thinking more about sustainability, it's something that has been coming up. And I'm basically in the process of trying to figure out how I'm going to do with that. Now, what I do now is when I have a lot of trash out there, I'll usually go to my brother's house, or sometimes I stay with him and help him do things. And I'll package all the trash and just take it there. And I'll put it in his trash. And of course, the trash trucks come by and pick that up. But I'm always looking for or thinking about more sustainable ways to live out there. I'm also thinking about when I get an opportunity, because hopefully, Ethan, I will be retiring in the next 5 or 6 years or whatever, and I'll try and spend more time there. I want to spend as much time there or enough time there to actually start a garden and start growing and producing vegetables and stuff like that and start canning those. But that's an idea that's way far down the line because that's more than a thought. That's kind of hard work. So maybe not as hard as building a house, but it does still take a lot of time. So it has made me start thinking more about sustainability and how I want to reduce my carbon footprint as I spend more time out there, because I'm basically on unpolluted land and I don't want to do a lot of stuff to change that.
How do you stay motivated to continue working on the small house, you know, even when you're faced with any challenges or setbacks, or just when the project feels like it's so far away physically?
Two main reasons. The first reason is that I spend a lot of time behind my desk at work. I'm really not cut out for that kind of thing because my whole career in photography, I've been freelance, which means I've been moving around, chasing, running, and doing things. So it's a good getaway to go out and do that. And then, of course, sitting at a desk, you gain weight, or I've been gaining weight. So what the project means to me is that I get a chance to get out of the office. I get a chance to move around all day doing something, which means that I spend less time eating or thinking about eating, and then I'm working all day. So if I'm eating less and I'm working all day, burning off all these calories means I stay in pretty good shape. That's a really big motivator. And just the fact of just the fact that the kind of work that I do, I need to get away from it all and just see something that's much nicer. And, you know, it just helps a whole lot better if I can get away. So that's the biggest thing. I just love being in the woods also. And the fact of being in the woods by myself, I don't know how much that says about me and people, but I think I'm liking that much, much more. Because as I said, in the beginning, it started off as I want to build this house. I want to build it. But as it's got gone on, it's more about being in the woods, spending time by myself. Or when my wife comes, we hang out there too. She's only been there once thus far, but we're going to go back probably next month, and hopefully we'll get a chance to be out there together for a little bit. But those are the two main factors of the main reasons, I should say, that helps keep me motivated. And each time I go there, I get something else done. So I can see the end of this project. Actually, I don't know when that's going to happen, but I do see it ending. And then, of course, once it ends, then there will be something else that I want to do, because I'm going to have to stop building the house and build a storage shed, because I got all my building materials and junk and stuff in the house. So if I want to work in one particular corner of the house, I have to move everything to another corner. And then when I get to that corner, I got to move it again. So I'm going to actually put a halt on that and just build a small storage building to get everything out of the way so I can build the way that I should. Because
smart.
It's been a real interesting project, because there's a certain way that you're supposed to build when you're doing the foundation. You do that, and then you do the rough plumbing and stuff like that. And I never got a chance to do that because my time never really allowed it. So I'm having to go back and do the things I should have done in mm-hmm. order. But the most important thing for me was to actually get the house up and dry it in. So there are steps that I didn't do, now I have to go back and do. So that's why everything is actually in the house. So now once I take them out, I can get back and start building.
Yeah. What advice would you give to someone listening who's interested in doing something similar, you know, starting with raw land and kind of building in a more remote location?
Well, I think depending on their desire and their purpose, you have to look at it several different ways. If you're building mm-hmm. this to live in right away, you have to keep in mind that it's going to take time. And if you're doing it like me, I think that's a great way to do it, where you can do it as you go, and mm-hmm. it doesn't have to get done next month, next year, mm-hmm. whatever. That's a great thing. But I would say that if you're going to do something mm-hmm. like this, just remember your reasons that you're doing it, and just realize how long it's going yeah. to take, because it doesn't happen overnight, especially if you're doing it by yourself. You have to really slow down. And first of all, just keep in mind safety. Because when you're out there working with chainsaws and felling trees and things like yeah. that, or up on ladders, you know, one little mistake could be a disaster. Fortunately, I haven't had any. I've gotten a little cut while I was doing the septic tank. That's been about it. But that's something you really have to consider mm-hmm. is safety mm-hmm. and just the reasons that you're there, why you're doing it, and, you know, the end result.
Yeah. Got it. Nice. And then one thing that I like to ask all my guests is, you know, what are two or three books or resources? It could be like YouTube channels, anything that's kind of helped you along the way that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Well, outside of just having the idea, the very first thing that really made a lot of sense to me is a book that I read. And Frieda, I don't know if you gave me this book or not. I know that it's you may have given it to me, but it was from by Michael Pollan. It's called A Place of My Own. That was an excellent book, because of course this was before YouTube, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm. I gave it to you.
Oh, okay, cool. I thought you did, because that made a lot of sense to me. I mean, I was thinking about it in my head, but when you don't see stuff like that, you don't know that people are doing it. And this writer, he just documented in book form his process of building a writer's house on his land, because he was a writer. His
yep.
You've heard of Michael Pollan, then?
Yep.
He was a writer. His wife was he was an artist, and I think he said something about, you know, being smelling the fumes from the turpentine and the paint, and he was trying to write. So he mm-hmm. built his own small place in the woods there. The next thing is, I got a professional on speed dial who is a good friend of mine. We were actually in wood shop together in junior high school, and he continued on and he became a contractor. So
awesome.
Anytime most time before I leave, while I'm gone, and when I come back, we have these meetings, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I basically bring up or I initiate. and I talk about everything that I want to do, and he'll give me ideas and the ways I should and shouldn't do it and what I should think about and how I should think about it. So if I have a problem, I call him, and I always tell him when I'm getting ready to go, I says, be on standby because you know I'm going to call. If I have any kind of problems, I call him. So that's probably been the best.
Yep.
And then there are the other numerous YouTube channels. And of course, Bryce from Living Tiny. No, I forget his channel, but
Living Big in a Tiny House.
Yeah. Love his stuff. So I'm always watching that every week. I think I've seen just about every Tiny House YouTube channel out there. And the whole nine yards. So those are the things that usually...
Oh, wow.
Because I'm always researching and seeing what people is doing. Because when I finish this house, there are a couple of others I want to do out there, providing I can still, you know, nail a hammer.
Ah.
I mean, hammer a nail. Because I'm getting... You know, we don't know what our health is going to be. So there are a couple of other things that I want to build out there. Because I have this... property, and I can do whatever I want with it, providing I can afford it.
Nice. Well, Otis and Frida, thank you so much for being guests on the show today. I really enjoyed meeting you both.
Great. It was a good talking to you, Ethan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Otis and Frida Sanders for being guests on the show today. You can find the show notes for this episode, including photos of the cabin and a complete transcript, and much more, of course, over at thetinyhouse.net/268. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/268. Well, that's all for this week. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.